protect their populations. And now we're clearly seeing the result. You know, he attended a large Republican fundraiser. I'm not sure if that's where he contracted it, but at some point he contracted it. I highly doubt he's come in contact with any of the migrants
who
recently
seconds.
Arrived in the United States.
Well, I want to thank you very much.
It's very concerning hearing this rhetoric from him.
Manoj Govindaya, Director of Policy and Government Affairs at Raisis in Texas. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz-Mike-Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astugio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Adriana Contreras, our General Manager, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM and translator K282BH in Philomath at 104.3 FM. And we're streaming at the top of
KBOO
our KBOO
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Tune in the fourth Monday of each month at 11:30 a.m. to Voices for the Animals.
We discuss the latest news and trends in the animal world
and the role of activism surrounding the issues of animal rights.
That's Voices for the Animals at 11:30 a.m. on the fourth Monday of each month on KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new grim record set as Oregon hits hospital limits and new COVID surge. Far-right extremist groups plan to return to Portland this week, and the murder trial for Vancouver teen Nikki Kuhnhausen starts this week. Good evening, this is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 18, 2021. I'm Ethan Sandweiss. Oregon set a new daily record for coronavirus cases on Tuesday. 2,941 cases were identified. This comes along with a grim surge in hospitalizations. The number jumped up nearly 90 in one day. 838 people with COVID are hospitalized and 222 are in intensive care units. These high numbers of hospitalizations mean there is often little or no space to care for others who are sent to hospitals for other injuries and illnesses. The Oregon Health Authority has said that in Central Oregon, there are no staffed adult ICU beds left. In Southern Oregon, there's only one. The counties with the highest case counts are Marion, Douglas, Washington, and Lane counties. 15 deaths were reported Tuesday. There are 30 active cases of coronavirus at Sheridan Correctional Facility, which is Oregon's only federal prison. A court filing submitted on Friday says inmates have faced, quote, dangerous and unbearable conditions that, quote, could reasonably be considered excessive punishment. 1,500 inmates are locked up in Sheridan, Oregon, and they have the second highest number of COVID cases in the country. The highest is at a federal prison in Florida. The public defender wrote in her court filing that, quote, inmates are begging for help and that they, quote, describe serious untreated medical conditions, mental stress from isolation, and unresponsive and demoralized staff. The filing asks a federal judge to order an inspection of the prison and give regular updates about things like the vaccination rates of prison staff, the length of time that inmates are confined to their cells, and an assigned person to help staff and inmates communicate their concerns. While banning mask and vaccination mandates in the state, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who is fully vaccinated, has tested positive for COVID. He is isolating in the governor's mansion and has received the same monoclonal antibody treatment that former President Trump received. While Abbott's order to keep school districts from mandating masks was recently upheld by the state Supreme Court, several school districts are still planning to require masks, which could put some of their state funding at risk. The school board of Paris, Texas, voted yesterday 5-1 to mandate mask wearing as part of the school dress code. The district said in a statement, quote, "The Texas governor does not have the authority to usurp the Board of Trustees' exclusive power and duty to govern and oversee the management of the public schools of the district." Last week, Texas and Florida combined accounted for about 40% of the new COVID cases in the country. This Sunday, the 22nd, marks the one-year anniversary of armed pro-Trump demonstrators brawling with their anti-fascist counter to protesters in downtown Portland. 1 year later, the Proud Boys are planning to return. Last year, far-right extremists fought with anti-fascists for hours in front of the Multnomah County Justice Center. Plans for how to avoid such violence instigated by outside groups coming into the city this year haven't been clarified by authorities. City and county and state officials have issued statements condemning violence and supporting peaceful expressions of free speech. Mayor Ted Wheeler plans to host a virtual community gathering on Friday to denounce hate and violence, according to OPB. Last year, the Portland police said their lack of intervention in the brawl was because many officers were running on low sleep from policing the demonstration the night before. The Portland police's response to different protest groups has been disparate. Far-right extremists are not often treated with the same severity as left-leaning protesters. At the beginning of August 2021, Proud Boys gathered in downtown Portland and acted as security for a rally held by an anti-LGBTQ and anti-COVID restriction preacher. They again brawled with counter-protesters with police nearby. That night, one far-right extremist pointed a gun at a Willamette Week photojournalist. The gun was later determined to be an airsoft gun, and the man was charged with a count of menacing. Eric Ward is the executive director of the Western States Center. He told OPB that groups like the Proud Boys thrive when they can undermine the legitimacy of the government and portray cities like Portland as being out of control, where liberal leadership has failed. He said, quote, "That's dangerous because that narrative has been used to justify a number of sets of activity, from a federal incursion a year ago to justifying far-right violence on the streets," end quote. City officials and Portland police spokespeople say they are working on plans for the weekend, though a spokesperson for the Oregon State Police says they haven't received any requests for assistance. The murder trial for 17-year-old Vancouver teen Nikki Kuhnhausen started this week, more than 2 years after her death. Kuhnhausen went missing in Clark County in June of 2019, prompting a massive search for her. Her body was found in rural Clark County 6 months later. The alleged killer is 27-year-old David Bogdanov. He's been charged with second-degree murder as well as a hate crime. The prosecution plans to show that Bogdanov strangled Kuhnhausen to death after learning she was transgender. In the 2 years between Kuhnhausen's death and the trial, Washington State passed the Nikki Kuhnhausen Act, which outlaws the LGBTQ panic defense for defendants accused of harming or killing gay and trans victims for their identity. Oregon also passed a similar law this year. Instead, Bogdanov's defense team said in an opening statement that they intend to show that he acted in self-defense, that Kuhnhausen had attacked him. The trial is expected to last for about 2 weeks. A campaign is underway to double the maximum dollar amount of federal Pell Grants distributed to help students afford higher education. Currently, the maximum Pell Grant covers less than a third of the cost of a public university. Eric Tegedoff has the story.
Pell Grants are a lifeline for many students attending college, but the federal aid covers far less than it used to. That's why student groups, colleges, and universities are urging Congress to pass a measure to double the amount allotted to students. The maximum Pell Grant for this academic year is about $6,500, Jim Brooks, director of student financial aid and scholarships at the University of Oregon, says many have criticized the grants for not keeping up with the cost of college.
If you think about $13,000 in cost of attendance, that would have a big impact on students everywhere. So personally, as someone who's been a Pell recipient and has worked with lots of students at more than one institution who are Pell eligible, I think doubling Pell would be incredible.
In the past, Pell Grants covered as much as three-quarters of the cost of attending a public university. Today, it covers less than a third. About 90% of Pell Grants go to families with incomes below $50,000. More than $290 million in Pell Grants came to Oregon in the last disbursement. Nearly 7 million students, or about 40%, are Pell Grant recipients, but they're still more likely to graduate with debt than other students. Brooks says folks are always concerned about the cost of college, and the pandemic has deepened those concerns.
We have certainly seen more families who've been financially impacted by the pandemic in one way or the other, whether it's a parent losing income or a parent being laid off for a while, losing their job completely because the business is closing.
Brooks sees Pell Grants as foundational for families and for students' future success.
This is money they're going to have that they can use for educational costs, and they aren't going to have to repay. So that they reap the benefits of their education, that basically opens up job market for them. It opens things up that they wouldn't have if they were not able to earn a college degree.
UO also has a program called Pathway Oregon, which helps Pell Grant eligible students pay tuition and other fees through a combination of federal, state, and university funds. Nearly 1,200 organizations, including 900 colleges and universities, signed a letter to Congress in March urging members to double the maximum Pell Grant amount. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
NATO is putting the blame on Afghan leadership for the swift takeover of the country by the Taliban, and a new poll shows that 69% of Americans support masking mandates. With these stories and more, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And we remain committed to completing evacuations, including our Afghan colleagues, as soon as possible. The Taliban must respect and facilitate the safe departure of all those who wish to leave.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg discusses the organization's decision to end the military operation in Afghanistan. The Secretary General blamed the Afghan leadership for failing to stop the Taliban from taking control of the country and expressed surprise at the speed of the collapse. A Taliban spokesman promised Tuesday that the insurgents who overran Afghanistan in recent days would respect women's rights and would not exact revenge. An Axios Ipsos poll shows that 69% of Americans support masking requirements in schools, while only 30% oppose such measures. Just 33% said they were supportive of bans on mask mandates. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear.
We're going to have to very carefully consider and continue to evaluate whether or not we need to bring back a statewide mask mandate. That's where we are.
The Biden administration reported it is close to advising fully vaccinated Americans to get COVID-19 booster shots 8 months after their last vaccine. The boosters would be intended to protect against the highly contagious Delta variant. The recommendations are expected to be announced today. Meanwhile, five states, Florida, Louisiana, Hawaii, Oregon, and Mississippi, have reached their highest ever seen 7-day averages in new coronavirus infections, surpassing even the horrific winter surge. One in five hospitals report more than 95% of their ICU beds are occupied, a figure that has doubled in just the past few weeks. More than 7 million Americans are set to lose their unemployment aid immediately after Labor Day. Gig workers and other unemployed Americans receiving aid through the programs created for the pandemic will see those checks and the $300 weekly federal supplement end on September 7th. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell at a virtual town hall.
We can see that the pandemic has changed our economy in some important ways. Only time will tell how lasting these changes will be. But I think we know that we're not simply going back to the economy we had before the pandemic.
The nation's top auto safety watchdog has launched a formal investigation of Tesla's driver assistance system after nearly a dozen crashes involving parked emergency vehicles occurred while autopilot was engaged. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration inquiry covers Teslas produced from 2014 to 2021. The Bureau of Reclamation has declared the first ever water shortage emergency on the Colorado River, a waterway that serves 40 million Americans. Lake Mead, the largest reservoir in the U.S. by volume, has drained at an alarming rate this year. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael has other questions about Afghanistan.
Since Afghanistan turned out this way, will the Pentagon budget go down? Will the War Powers Act be repealed? Can the U.S. get less involved in Middle East politics, less dependent on oil, imported and domestic? Will the U.S. recognize Palestinian rights and suffering even though it angers Israel? Will the Afghan failure learn the U.S. to have more respect for the non-white world, like maybe let folks have their first COVID shots before we get thirdsies? Those who run America have already shut out most of the world, and they're working on shutting out big chunks of Americans. New census numbers are out, so let the merry gerrymandering begin to lock in a Republican congressional majority to join the already lock on the Senate. What's voting got to do with it? At least Afghanistan gives the media an excuse to not talk about COVID. War is hell. Corrupt, hypocritical oligarchy is even worse, and it's right here in America for a lot more than 20 years. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for COVID Noise Filter, debunking myths about coronavirus. At 5:45, it's news from the BOO, your look at news inside KBOO with co-interim station manager Jenna Yokoyama. At 6, stay tuned for Rural Roots Rising, a program by and for rural Oregonians. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will have a few clouds with an overnight low of 61 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with a high of 80 degrees. Today in history, in 1920, the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution is ratified, guaranteeing women the right to vote. It would be some 40 years later, however, until that right was protected for women of color. The quote of the day is from American feminist author and activist Gloria Steinem, who said, quote, "We've begun to raise daughters to be more like sons, but few have the courage to raise our sons to be more like our daughters." A First Nations chief in Nova Scotia was arrested after launching a treaty lobster fishery, and the Blackfeet Nation issues a mask mandate as COVID cases rise in Montana. With those stories and more, it's Trip Krause with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Trip Krause, in for Antonio Gonzalez. The chief for the second largest Mi'kmaq band in Nova Scotia is arresting a treaty lobster fishery. Sopekanekiti First Nation chief Mike Sack was arrested Monday. He says officers with the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans detained him after his community's boats left the wharf. Sack told APTN that no charges were filed. The treaty fishery, which started in 2020, is self-regulated by Sopekanekiti First Nation, has not been endorsed by the DFO, the federal body that regulates most fisheries in Canada. DFO says the treaty fishery is an illegal fishery. Mi'kmaq and non-Indigenous lobster fishers continue to battle for fishing rights stemming from a 1999 Canada Supreme Court ruling that upholds the Halifax Treaties that provides for the right to fish for Indigenous people in Canada. Last fall, Mi'kmaq fishers began what they called a moderate livelihood fishery, fishing where and when they wanted, including outside the federally regulated fishing season. Non-Indigenous fishers disputed the fishery, pulled traps, and burned a lobster pound. The Sopekanekiti Fisheries Department says that it is no longer using the term moderate livelihood fishery because it's a phrase coined by a court decision. The Blackfeet Incident Command Team issued an announcement this week outlining strategies to stop a recent surge in COVID-19 cases. Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more.
The Blackfeet Incident Command Team issued an announcement outlining strategies to stop a recent surge in COVID-19 cases. The Blackfeet Nation has issued a mandatory mask mandate. Tribal offices will be closed to the public and non-essential tribal government travel will be suspended. James Neely is the public relations representative for the Blackfeet Nation. He says that the reservation is not shutting down.
And this does not affect tourists coming through to the park. This does not affect anybody leaving the reservation.
Neely also says there are 18 active cases of coronavirus, and these individuals have been linked to 100 others through contact tracing. The Blackfeet Nation has lost 48 tribal members to the COVID-19 pandemic. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
In July, the Hamilton, Ontario City Council voted 12-3 to keep a statue of John A. Macdonald, Canada's first prime minister, in a downtown park. Macdonald is largely considered the architect of Canada's residential schools. On Saturday, hundreds of people attended a rally and a march calling for its removal. Activists tied a rope around the neck of the statue and pulled it down. Organizers said the purpose of the rally was to show opposition to the city council decision to keep the statue. No arrests were immediately made, but Hamilton police say that are investigating the incident. Ohio lawmakers introduced a resolution that calls on school districts to retire Native American mascots. According to the Ohio High School Athletic Association, 79 high schools use Native American nicknames and mascots. The Environmental Protection Agency and the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho issued a ban on open outdoor burning on the reservation. The ban was in response to elevated pollution and regional fires and weather projections indicating poor air quality. The burn ban applies for all outdoor and agriculture burning, including camping and recreational fire. The EPA also asked reservation residents to reduce all sources of air pollution if possible, including driving and idling vehicles. The Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals ruled that last year's Supreme Court decision in the McGirt case will remain the law of the land, but it only applies to criminal cases going forward. Oklahoma's newly appointed Attorney General John O'Connor also filed a petition for the highest federal court to overturn the McGirt decision. Two visitors were arrested and arraigned for allegedly using fake vaccine cards to travel to Hawaii. Investigators say that the two are in violation of the state's rules, which require travelers to produce either a negative coronavirus test or proof of vaccination to avoid quarantine when entering the state. For the misdemeanor, they face a fine of up to $5,000, a year in prison, or both. For National Native News, I'm Trip Krause.
A data security breach has exposed the personal information of over 40 million T-Mobile customers, according to an announcement yesterday. A variety of information was stolen, including phone numbers, social security numbers, physical addresses, and PINs, with more serious damage occurring to around 9 million of those customers who were hacked. T-Mobile said they are confident the point of entry for the hacking has been shut down. Because of the breach, the company has offered its customers 2 years of free identity protection. The story broke Sunday when the website Motherboard reported that someone on the dark web claimed to have obtained the data from 100 million accounts from T-Mobile's servers. A portion of that data was being offered for sale on an underground forum for 6 Bitcoin, about $280,000. The data stolen is considered more valuable than most hacks, as it ties together names, phone numbers, and physical addresses. T-Mobile is coordinating with law enforcement agencies as the investigation continues. The pandemic has exacerbated many gender, race, and income disparities in the U.S. As adults, social service advocates are urging lawmakers to put permanent policies like guaranteed income and the child tax credit in place. Lily Bulkey brings us this story from Mississippi.
The pandemic has exacerbated longtime economic inequalities, including race and gender disparities in unemployment, working conditions, and poverty levels. Groups working to change this are pushing for policies like guaranteed income and the child tax credit, which they say especially help working moms, low-income women, and women of color. A mom of three kids from Jackson, Mississippi, Aisha is part of the Magnolia Mothers Trust, which in its third year provides a guaranteed income of $1,000 a month for 12 months to at least 100 low-income Black mothers.
I wish it could also be provided to more families, you know, and not limited to how many families can receive it. And I feel like the government, President Biden's office, they all should want to pitch in a little more to help with programs such as MMP.
The American Rescue Plan includes an expanded child tax credit for 2021, which Aisha thinks should be made permanent. Almost two-thirds of Americans have been living paycheck to paycheck in the pandemic, and women have seen additional challenges like childcare that limit their ability to work outside the home. In the second cohort of the Magnolia Mothers Trust, the percentage of moms able to keep up with their bills increased from 37 to 80%. And after a year of guaranteed income, 85% of them had completed their high school education, compared to 63% at the start. Tia, another mom from Jackson, says she was able to handle even unexpected expenses.
Like my car breaking down, I was able to get a fee. Instead of have to be like, okay, I'm going to have to wait next pay period. Because at one time, I was scared to spend it, like, just let me leave it there. But then I was like, okay, I got it. So then I was able to do more with the kids.
Advocates from the MMT program say it's important to give people cash rather than vouchers or subsidies. They say programs like Guaranteed Income and the Child Tax Credit allow people to make the best decisions for their specific financial circumstances. This story was produced with original reporting from Katie Fleischer for Miss Magazine. This is Lily Bolke for North Carolina News Service.
Strong winds drove more extreme activity by the Dixie Fire. Currently the country's largest fire and the biggest single wildfire in California history, bringing it nearer to Susanville, a city of 18,000. While the Dixie Fire is 31% contained, it grew by 40,000 acres, bringing its spread to over 604,000 acres. In Nevada, school administrators delayed start times in the Reno-Sparks area because of a cloak of wildfire smoke from the Dixie Fire covering the region. The winds led Pacific Gas and Electric to begin shutting off power to about 51,000 customers in 18 Northern California counties as a precaution. About 120 miles south of Susanville, the Caldor Fire grew from 6,500 acres to 30,000 in one day. It has now consumed over 54,000 acres, destroyed the town of Grizzly Flats, and is threatening other mountain villages in the area. With the strong and unpredictable winds causing some fires to grow at double the rate predicted by models, the need for firefighters is exceeding the supply. Cal Fire Chief Dusty Martin said, quote, "We are in a resources-drawn-down environment. There are multiple large fires, and we are all competing for the same precious resources." Even stronger winds are expected in the region tonight. South Dakota lawmakers in charge of redistricting will soon hold their first meeting since the 2020 census was released. While that happens, a petition drive continues to gauge the support of South Dakota voters in seeking an independent commission to oversee the process. Mike Moen has more.
South Dakota lawmakers tasked with redrawing the state's legislative boundaries will soon meet following the release of census data used for the maps. A nonpartisan group says the current process allows for gerrymandering and hopes to prompt a major change. The South Dakota League of Women Voters is leading an effort through a coalition called Drawn Together SD. It's gathering petitions for a question on the 2022 ballot, asking for an independent commission to handle redistricting. League President Amy Scott Stoltz points out there haven't been big changes in voter registration numbers, but Republicans have gained overwhelming majorities in the legislature.
And when we look at that, we look at the way the lines were drawn, and we can see that there are areas where gerrymandering has come into play.
Because of their majorities, Republicans hold most of the seats on redistricting committees. The chair of the Senate panel says they're making the process fair as possible. Their next meeting is August 30th. Redistricting happens every 10 years after the census, but if the petition makes it onto the ballot next year and is approved, an independent panel would redraw the maps in 2023. Among other things, an independent commission would not allow either party to hold a majority. Scott Stoltz says that's been a common issue in most states.
We've seen it across the country where no matter what party is in charge, gerrymandering does come into play. So what we're doing is really giving the power back to the people and saving our democracy.
Supporters of the current process say the map drawn after the 2010 census did not result in any lawsuits. But two decades ago, the Native American community successfully sued the state, saying those maps violated their voting rights. Mike Moen, Greater Dakota News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 18, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dad and Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mike Moen, Nadia Romlagon, Trip Krause, Lily Bolke, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ethan Sandweiss.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mark Allen Derry, and I'm an infectious diseases specialist in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Doc Griggs, and I'm a community medicine doctor and health literacy expert. This is the Noise Filter Podcast, where an infectious diseases physician,
that's me, and a health literacy and communications expert,
that's me, talk about what you need to know about COVID-19.
You can find more information about this show and our other daily live updates and Q&A show at noisefiltershow.com.
So let's get started.
Many COVID deaths counts may be inaccurate. In the first week of August, the official global death toll was around 4.27 million people, according to a study from the Center for Global Development. However, this count may be inaccurate due to inadequate reporting within many nations. The study, published in late July, studied death data in Indian civil registries and found that between 3.4 and 4.7 million people died between the pandemic period of January 2020 and June 2021 than would have been predicted. This is called measuring the excess deaths, where analysts compare the death toll within one period to a previously similar period of time. The finding is around 10 times more than India's official death toll. Now, according to NPR, undercounts are happening in many other countries as well. In the U.S., One Health Metric Institute estimates that the real death toll is 200,000 more than the official count. The excess death model doesn't include cause of death in the data set, but relies on the assumption that the additional deaths are part of the toll of a health crisis like pandemic. So deaths because of getting sick with COVID are included, but so are those who may have died because they were unable to seek treatment or committed suicide because of the pandemic stress. In India, there are a number of reasons why this undercount may have occurred. One of the major causes is administrative. Many people from nearby regions go to places like Delhi for medical treatment. If they die while seeking treatment in Delhi, they could be cremated there, but stay on record as residents in another state. So their death essentially goes uncounted in both jurisdictions. Some Indian residents also believe the nation's politicians have worked to suppress news of rising COVID cases. In closing, according to NPR, finding more accurate deaths is essential to understanding the shortcomings of the public health response and could shed light on vaccine inequality and long-term effects on rising death rates. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases releases plan to make preemptive vaccines. Now, when COVID-19 began to spread amongst humans, scientists had already been researching coronaviruses for years. This meant that when the virus's genetic sequences were made available, scientists were able to develop highly effective vaccines faster than ever. There is a chance that we will not be so lucky with the next pandemic because it may come from an unfamiliar family of viruses, and we won't be as prepared to combat it. So according to the New York Times, the National Institutes for Allergy and Infectious Diseases is promoting a plan to make a prototype vaccines for 20 families of viruses that could spill over from animals to humans. Scientists would study the molecular structure of the viruses in order to determine what antibodies in the immune system would need to produce. This method is called structure-based design and allows vaccines to more accurately target the pathogen. That way, scientists could quickly manufacture vaccines and preemptively immunize people when surveillance networks detected virus spillover from animals. And if the virus broke out, it could be managed more efficiently. The program could also establish deals with pharmaceutical companies so that they'd be able to manufacture more quickly when the need arose. The project, though promising, would cost billions. The National Institutes for Allergy and Infectious Diseases will cover much of this itself, but the organization is seeking a budget allocation from the United States Congress. And folks, if you're interested in more information about vaccines, please visit the noisefiltershow.com website and go to the section that says watch. Doc Griggs and I created two really great animations that deal with vaccines. And the second animation, which deals with the advent of viral variants. So please go and check those out. Noisefiltershow.com. Go to watch. You'll see our cartoons. You'll enjoy them. They'll make you laugh. And I think we do a nice job educating y'all. Haiti sees first shipment of vaccines amid unrest. In early July, the Haitian president was assassinated, sparking a period of great unrest for the nation. The crime rate has continued to rise, and poverty has also risen during the pandemic. While the country has previously seen only sporadic COVID cases, it has recently experienced small clusters of outbreaks. Haitian public health officials worry this means COVID will begin to hit the country even harder. In a much-needed bright spot for Haiti, the country's received its first shipments of vaccines through the World Health Organization's COVAX initiative last month. According to NPR, getting the population vaccinated, however, may prove to be difficult. The nation has taken many precautions against the virus, and most Haitians have largely gone non-impacted by the illness. Some researchers speculated this is because Haitian residents tend to be younger and are therefore less likely to be symptomatic. Because of this and misinformation online, many Haitians are resistant to get the vaccines, which have been made available to all healthcare workers and elderly at centers across the regions. According to NPR, some residents in the country may be resistant to the vaccine simply because the unrest makes them feel as they have more important concerns. Public health experts in Haiti believe that this resistance will die down as the vaccine becomes more widely accessible. And let's hope that is definitely the case. Local news outlets spread misinformation. In March, local news sites in Phoenix and Atlanta both posted an article about COVID vaccines from a man listed on the Center for Countering Digital Hate's Disinformation Dozen for spreading dangerous misinformation about COVID-19. According to the New York Times, local news and smaller publications have attracted less attention than social media platforms like Facebook for spreading disinformation, but can be equally effective platforms for inaccurate messaging. In fact, a Knight Gallup study found that 45% of Americans trust local news organizations, while only 31% said they trusted national news organizations. Of course, many local news publications in the U.S. have done great reporting throughout the pandemic. According to the New York Times, a major publisher, Gannett, which has over 1,000 local publications throughout the U.S., has placed lots of value in fact-checking and accuracy over spread during the pandemic. But the industry at large has been hit hard by decreasing ad revenue and budget cuts, spreading staff thin. This leaves room for misinformation to spread as oversight lessens and many papers lack the resources to publish original journalism and must repurpose other material. According to the Times, this is especially dangerous because local news is often a starting point for claims to gain credibility. If a rumor is covered in local media, it can be pitched at other outlets with the corroboration of the previous reporting. In order to sustain quality reporting within our communities, it's imperative to support our local newspapers and news organizations when we can, and arm ourselves with quality information that is both factual and accurate. Tanzania's new administration attempts to correct past vaccine resistance. In early February of this year, Tanzania's health minister held a press conference in which she drank ginger, garlic, and lemon to encourage the public to use natural remedies to combat COVID-19. As an aside, ginger, garlic, and lemon have nothing to do with being able to combat COVID. back to the story. This was part of then-President John McFuley's plan to deny any shipments of COVID vaccine, stating that if it's possible to develop a COVID vaccine so quickly, then there should already have been a vaccine for HIV. And let me be very clear, the reason why we've not been able to create a vaccine for HIV is that the virus mutates very, very rapidly, making very difficult for us to create a target for a vaccine, whereas the so-called spike protein off of the COVID-19 virus, that's that spike protein, that's that the ball that you see sitting on the end of a stick with every image that you've seen of COVID, that spike protein, very easy to make a vaccine out of. And this is why we were able to do so quickly. Back to the story. According to NPR, this stance is out of character for Tanzania, which has 99% coverage of child immunization and is ranked in the top 10 countries for vaccinations in 2014. Sociologists aren't quite sure why the nation pivoted so sharply. However, according to The Lancet, it may have been a symptom of general COVID denialism. The government declared Tanzania COVID-free before the vaccines were even available to them. Now, however, President Magufuli has died and a new administration has taken a different stance on the vaccine. In late July, the new president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, officially launching the nation's vaccination effort. The country now aims to vaccinate 60% of its population, and many public health officials worry the previous president's skepticism will make that effort more difficult. In July of last year, Tanzania passed regulations preventing the posting of information about COVID outbreaks without government approval. And because of a lack of access to accurate information, disinformation spread, and some Tanzanians believe the virus is just Western propaganda. Although the effort may be harder, most public health officials in the country who expressed skepticism before have begun to encourage more precautions and advocates for vaccinations. Ketamine can treat depression. Did you know that ketamine, an anesthesia medication that is typically known for its recreational use as a party drug, can also be prescribed legally by doctors? Well, now ketamine is showing great promise as a medication to treat depression from those that haven't found relief from other depression treatments. According to ABC News, a growing number of evidence has shown that ketamine, which has been used since the 1970s as an anesthesia, can be successful in treating depression and suicidal behaviors. In fact, ketamine is part of a growing field of research into whether drugs that have traditionally been viewed as illegal psychedelics or party drugs could, in certain contexts, help people with depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other behavioral health and psychiatric disorders. In 2019, the FDA approved a ketamine-related nasal spray drug, which, given in conjunction with antidepressants, have been shown to help people with treatment-resistant depression. Generic ketamine isn't specifically approved as a depression treatment, but U.S. doctors are often allowed to prescribe Food and Drug Administration approved medications as quote-unquote off-label for another use. This can create problems for patients, though, because its use for depression is off-label, it is typically not covered by health insurances. Consequently, there are access issues, and the drug is often limited to a subset of the population that can pay out of pocket or be part of a clinical trial. Also, because it's a drug that potentially can be abused, patients typically need to be treated in the clinic and typically cannot take multiple doses of the medication home with them. Now, even though there are a few issues with its use and access to the medication, ketamine has great promise as a powerful option for people struggling with depression. Hopefully, in the future, these issues can be resolved so ketamine can be a treatment option for all who need it. Just as a reminder that COVID-19 and the human immunodeficiency virus do share the same risk factors. Doc Griggs?
Thanks for listening to the Noise Filter Daily Podcast. Dr. Derry and I have a daily show at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time where we go into more detail on stories and answer your questions about COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at NoiseFilter on Instagram, NoiseFilterNola on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to NoiseFilterShow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.